Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10x points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Holla talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today, I'm slowing it down because you did. We're answering your listener questions.
I'm a fan of the dramatic pause, Joel, but we're glad to have folks back here on a Monday.
You got
to
shake things up every now and again.
It's true. Hope everyone had a great St. Patrick's Day over the weekend. Speaking of shaking things up, but we have some fantastic listener questions to get to. We've got a listener who's wondering if it's worth it to go organic. We're going to talk about that, as well as we're going to discuss the risks of health sharing. And another listener, she's wondering what she should do if she makes too much money to contribute to our favorite tax advantage retirement accounts. We'll get to that plus more during our episode today.
There are problems, and there are bad problems and there are good problems. That last one you mentioned, Matt, that's a good problem to have, right? Like, oh, I'm making too much money to do this thing. But it's still an important financial conundrum to discuss.
So, I would say most of the questions we get, they're mostly good problems, because it means that you have the ability to earn money and you are taking a proactive stance and approach when it comes to how it is that you should either spend less or invest more.
Talking about being proactive.
We've got some great folks who listen to our show. That's all I'm saying.
No, I completely agree. But talking about being proactive, listener Kristen posted in the How to Money Facebook group, which if you're on Facebook regularly and you're not a part of the How to Money Facebook group, change that. Join the group. It's awesome. A bunch of great folks posting interesting things, helping each other out with their personal finances to make more progress. But I had not heard of this company, and she was kind of posting to kind of get some crowd reactions.
Feedback?
Yeah. It's billed as a 401k for home ownership.
Okay.
A company called Foyer. And basically,
I like the name.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, it's like the entryway.
Makes you think of a house.
Yeah,
for you.
So
I can get behind that.
They will match some of what you contribute to this account, and it's in an effort to help you save for the down payment for the house that you're looking to buy. Did you look into this? What were your thoughts?
In the show notes, you linked to the website of this company. It's one of these new companies, slick website. They're talking about how much they'll pay in interest as well, because I didn't look that much into it, whether or not it's a bank. But I did go digging for the for how much they would actually match, because that's the most appealing part of this, right? Like, why not go with a company who's also going to, one for one, for every dollar you contribute, help you to achieve your dreams of home ownership?
I mean,
until you get to the rewards details, it's like a separate PDF. Yeah. $200 maximum that they're only willing to match per year. What's that going to get you? That doesn't even get you, like, the doorknob to get into your Foyer.
Yeah.
It's not enough.
And then once you do, I guess, sign up with Foyer, like, you're forced to use their agents, I believe, right? So I think that's part of the...
I was curious in like, what are they paying? Because like that's the biggest selling point, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is trying to, I think, solve a problem that doesn't really exist. There are savings buckets that a lot of the great savings accounts offer that you can partake in. You can essentially start funneling money into your down payment fund without even having to open a separate account. And then if you're looking for like some sort of match or something, well, there are bonuses oftentimes to open up a new bank account, just like there are to open up a new credit card. So
yeah, you'll get like 4 years worth of what it is that 4 years going to match you just by moving to a new bank.
Yeah. So why don't you instead just opt to remain a free agent, essentially,
when, yeah, I like
with
that.
What agent you're able to choose. And that way you're not tied into some of these nitty gritty details that a company like Foyer makes you abide by. So
might be somebody who doesn't know the area where you're looking to buy. Like there are so many other considerations that go into hiring the right realtor.
Yeah. I don't think we're saying $200 doesn't matter. I just think we're saying, hey,
it's not worth it.
It's not worth it for this product.
Yeah, it's not worth the squeeze. Let's introduce our beer that you and I are going to enjoy during this episode. This one's called a Nomaste IPA. It's got a gnome.
It's a gnome pun.
And Todd, you thought we forgot about you, didn't you? This is the other beer that you donated to the show. We appreciate that. Todd's down there in our old stomping grounds down there in Ormwood Park.
Yep. We'll give our thoughts on this one at the end of the episode.
At the end. That's right, man.
All right. Well, let's move on, Matt. Let's get to the listener questions. If you have a money question, you want Matt and I to tackle it on an upcoming episode, we'd absolutely love to. Just go to howtomoney.com/ask or record a voice memo with your question and send it our way via email, howtomoneypod@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you. Hope to take it next week on the show. And Matt, let's get to the first question of this episode. This one is about buying organic.
Hi, Matt and Joel. This is Lindy Thurston from Knoxville, Tennessee. I know this is a money podcast and not a granola parenting podcast, but considering you are both fathers, I'm hoping you might be able to share some insight. I have a 3-month-old baby boy, and this is our first child. When we were putting his nursery together, our main concern was how to do this as frugally as possible. Now I'm concerned that I didn't spend enough time vetting the items we chose to buy based on how non-toxic the products are. For example, I found a good deal on a crib mattress for $80 on Wayfair. The mattress is made of polyurethane 30D foam, is flame retardant, and water resistant. I am now reading many parents refuse to buy these type mattresses because the chemicals that make crib mattresses flame retardant and water resistant are very toxic and harmful to babies' developing brain and immune system and can cause cancer, learning disabilities, asthma, etc. This has me considering throwing out this mattress and spending $150 or more on a certified non-toxic mattress made with organic materials. As a new parent, it is easy to go down a rabbit hole of information online and think that everything you are doing is harmful to your child and you're a bad parent for not doing everything as pure, organic, and non-toxic as possible. I consider myself to be a health-conscious person. I prioritize exercise, healthy eating. I avoid artificial food dyes and flavors, high fructose corn syrup, and almost all fast food. Was this a major priority for you guys? Did you spend the extra money or replace items because you later learned that they were potentially toxic or harmful? Is this all fear-mongering and companies are exploiting new and anxiety-ridden parents? Would you replace the mattress? I look forward to hearing from you. Thanks.
Lindy, great to hear from you. And first off, we want to say congrats on the new little guy that you've got there. And Joel, here we go. We're hearing from somebody who wants our advice on something that's not necessarily financial. We talked about this.
This has money implications, I will say.
There's always some sort of financial. Anything we talk about has some sort of financial implication. But
should I marry this person? You asked me that question. I'll also probably take you down a money path at some point in the conversation.
Got to crunch the numbers.
Right. What's her credit score? What's his credit score?
How much student loans do they have?
Yeah. Do you guys agree on the topic of money and what you want for out of your lives?
It's true. No, like it really is true. But I am willing for us to kind of pivot towards some granola parenting advice here for a minute. And first of all,
let me buy a Subaru first.
It is worth saying that not everything is about money, even though we're going to find sort of the financial angle. It's important to feel comfortable with what it is that you're bringing into your home and what we're putting into our bodies and what we're putting on our bodies. So all that to say, I don't think you're crazy for looking into this. I don't think you're crazy for wanting your baby to sleep on a mattress that you trust. At the heart of Lindy's question, Joel, I feel like this is it's frugal or cheat, right? Mm. Because anything that we are considering is oftentimes what we're saying is it worth it? What sacrifices are we making in order to pay this low price?
Yeah.
Or in order to get this thing for absolutely free without having to pay any sort of money.
It's possible to make an item cheap enough that I'm not interested because the item is so crummy, right? And at some point, sure, you have to factor in quality. And Matt, I feel like you've been kind of, you've changed at least some of the items you bring into your home as far as groceries, prioritizing more organics recently. And I haven't followed you down that path to nearly the same extent. But
totally. That's something that we've prioritized. And in part, it has a lot to do with your income as well. I'm not saying that we're like rolling in the dough right now. But a couple years ago, Kate and I said, all right, I think this is something we want to prioritize. Every day we eat, like, each kid eats a couple eggs and has a glass of milk. And we're like, okay, well, what if
just those two things,
even those two things, something that we are consuming on the reg, what if we go organic in that way? But that being said, we weren't doing that 10 years ago. I mean, Lindy's talking about a crib mattress. I think back to literally our first daughter. We bought a used mini crib off of Craigslist, yeah, which is extra sketchy, right? It's not like it's not even like Facebook Marketplace. I think for like 30 or 40 bucks. And that did not cross our minds at all as far as the toxicity. And
yeah,
maybe it had already off-gassed, and so we didn't have to. So buying used is actually the absolute best way to go.
Yeah.
But now that we're further along, we are considering other things that where we are taking health and whether or not things are organic, we're taking that more into account for sure.
And all of us, every single one of us are going to fall in different places along the spectrum of what we're willing to accept. And if the organic crib mattress was $1,200 and the gassy mattress, that's what I'm going to call it, is $100, then that's probably too much of a discrepancy for even the organic connoisseur, right?
Why does our baby have so much gas? It's the gassy mattress.
It's the stinky mattress, right?
Yeah.
Well, and you and I, we even came down to different spots on car seats. Like, I was willing to buy the cheapest car seat. You looked into like
Joel's out there. Joel's a proponent of used car seats that he finds on the side of the road.
Maybe not quite that far. But you spent more on your car seats because they are supposedly safer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And probably not supposedly. They probably actually are safer.
It's like 9-point harness versus
Joel's,
which is like, it's only 1-point harness. The kid just like flies off the side.
That's right. Hopefully not quite that bad, but like, yeah, it's just something that we didn't prioritize. And I will say there are regulations for baby mattress. The USDA has them in place. In case that's helpful to know, just like there is kind of a bare minimum threshold that people need to meet. And I will say, I did a quick Google search, Matt, about organic mattresses for babies. The first quote I saw saying that you need one was from the head of an organic mattress company. So there are people with vested interests being quoted in some of these articles telling you that that's the route you need to take. And not typically shaming people, but making it seem like it's this really, really important decision. And
they're like, it's your life. You deal with a gassy baby.
It's your baby. Do you love them or not? You know, and it feels like that kind of decision, I think, for people sometimes. And so I just don't necessarily think that an organic mattress is a need. But ultimately, again, that depends on your values.
Yeah.
And in Lindy's case, I hate that she already bought one that she now thinks isn't up to snuff. But I do think if she feels strongly enough, it might make sense to sell it and upgrade to an organic mattress if she's got the funds. It just makes me think too, I mean, baby stuff is, my friend Tim told me, oh, you got to get this device in the crib so that you know if the baby like turns over or stops moving or something at night.
Oh, the SIDS?
Yeah, yeah.
Alarm? Dude,
I never got it.
Even from like the crunchiest parents we know, I'm thinking of some old friends of ours in town. They're just like, oh, no. If you want to sleep at all, don't put that thing on your baby's foot or something like that. Yeah, because it goes off all the time. That's like all the false alarms, and they're just like, screw it.
So
we don't need that.
These are the kind of things. I mean, like, granted, obviously SIDS is pretty much the worst thing that could happen to your family,
right?
I could
not imagine. Yes.
Me neither.
It's terrible.
Me neither. So it's not like that was like, oh, cool, I don't care about that thing. It was just
the product that was introduced to the market did not seem like it was solving that problem.
Yeah. So even though people swore by it and that was the thing you had to do to quote unquote prove that you love your kid, to me, I just didn't think that was true. So in your case, though, Lindy, I think this sounds like it's worth prioritizing. It's worth upgrading your mattress and spending the additional dollars because of all the research you've done and how much this appears to mean to you.
Yeah, I mean, considering how much babies sleep or how much you want them to sleep. But that's like one of the things we've talked about. It's like, okay, maybe it's worth prioritizing a nicer mattress.
It's like a la milk and eggs, right?
Yeah. But you mentioned the head of the organic mattress company, Joel, and maybe how they're trying to almost instill this fear in folks. and to maybe even almost make you seem sort of like negligent, maybe, if you were not to get this for your kid.
It's one way to sell a product.
Like, I would say, too, that first-time parents in particular, it's them who often go down these different rabbit holes. And for different things, I think we did the same thing. But so often, parents end up doing this out of guilt. And they specifically end up spending large amounts of money on, I think, honestly, two things in particular. It makes me think of, like, weddings, how much money is spent there. But then, again, when it comes to to babies, I think I would not be surprised if it's the same folks who are spending, like, top dollar on weddings are also spending top dollar on their babies as well.
Think about the rule of thumb for engagement rings. Who do you think came up with that?
Similarly.
Three times your monthly income? Well, or you don't love the person you're proposing to? Like, come on now. Like, that's clearly an industry plan.
Yeah. And with those in particular, I think, like, there are heightened emotions involved. And so, like, I would just say to be careful on who it is you're following in the different spaces as you're kind of navigating life. Be careful with who you're reading, because I think it's a great idea to educate yourself and to make sure that you are performing your due diligence. But there's definitely a lot of fear-mongering that takes place as well. I mean, I'll say that my kids, all four of them, slept on that same stinking mattress in that same mini crib.
Not stinky, stinky.
And they're brilliant kids. So maybe the used way is totally the way to go.
All Mix Einsteins they are, for sure.
As opposed to, splurging on the organic.
That's right. No, I agree. So I think there's a difference between letting your kid eat paint chips or drink Coke out of, like, a baby bottle, something like that, like at 3 months old, which is, I think, how old Lindy said her son was, and then making sure that the mattress is 100% fully organic.
Sure.
And I don't know, Lindy, she actually followed up via email. She mentioned that she purchased a new mattress just before we opted to take this question. But this felt like something I think worth discussing anyway, because I think there's a teachable moment in here for all of us. And, like, she mentioned she did it as inexpensively as possible. But it's my belief that most of us feel this push and pull, right? It's hard to let some things go. And, you know, car safety is another one that people write in about, right? The much older used cars we typically drive and recommend, they're not safe enough, guys. How dare you recommend someone buy a 2010 car or something like that? It doesn't have all these new lane departure warnings and all these new methods to keep people safe when they're driving. And often they use that as a reason to upgrade their car to a newer model. And I get that. Like, I get the reason and the desire to drive in a safer vehicle, but their reasoning doesn't compel me to upgrade my car.
Sure.
To each their own, I guess. And we all, there's a certain amount of risk that all of us have to take on in almost every area of our lives, right? It's even just driving a car in and of itself is a risky endeavor.
Yes,
and
it
we
is.
All take our lives into our own hands every single day when we drive a car on the road. And the same thing is true with some of the things that we decide to eat or some of the ways that we decide to live and
totally.
Some of the purchases we make also.
Yeah. I think what you have to ask yourself is what is good enough? Because, like, going back to the wedding example, like, at a certain point, for anyone who's hosted a wedding or had a big wedding, like, at some point you have to decide who you're going to invite. Like, at some point you have to draw a line in the sand, because that's, like, one of the biggest impacts on the price of the wedding is, all right, are we multiplying price per head times 20 people, because those are the most important people to us, or, like, 200 people? Like, there's a big difference there. Or, like, another example, like, vacations. Yes, there are nicer locations than others, and even once you arrive at a vacation spot, there's a drastic difference between the most affordable place there and then like the nicest, most luxury hotel. But in both cases, like you're just as married whether you have 20 people there to witness it and whether you have barbecue or if you spent an exorbitant amount. And the same thing is true even with, like, vacation. You're still taking a break from work, whether you are at the more budget hotel kind of place or if you're at the super high-end luxury spa hotel. So I think that's important to keep in mind is, like, for you as an individual, at what point is this going to work? What is going to be good enough?
You're highlighting the reality of trade-offs.
Yeah.
Everything in life is a trade-off, and
Absolutely.
We can't afford everything. And so we have to kind of make those decisions, make those calls. Sometimes on the fly, we have to be thoughtful about those and make sure we're budgeting accordingly because,
we have limited resources.
That's right.
Yeah, you said and it's true, we can't afford it. Everything. But, like, what's funny is that there are some people who can't afford everything, and those folks do, in fact, end up getting the best everything. And you would think that, okay, well, that means then that there is, like, a finish line to cross. But what, you know what it makes me think of? Zuckerberg out in Hawaii with his cows that are eating macadamia nuts or whatever. And it's like, there is a way, and, like, it seems ridiculous, right? But, like, for him, that's important. Like, there is always going to be a way to kind of just to move the goalposts and to extend to lengthen whatever it is that you think is going to make you happy. And so I guess what I'm highlighting here is the fact that more money isn't the answer.
Yeah.
It's not just the fact that the limited resources are allowing or keeping us from achieving quote unquote happiness. At a certain point, you just have to decide that like enough is enough.
And maybe safety can be like a craft beer equivalent. Emily, my wife, she always tells me that I'm too safety averse, that I don't think about that kind of stuff enough, whether it be like a home alarm system. I'm like, who needs it? And even no matter what neighborhood I'm living in, I've always kind of felt that way. Or the car safety thing, like it just doesn't cross my radar that matters. But maybe that's just like a default in my brain. And other people are like, yeah, dude, sorry, you probably need to like, you know, ramp up how you think about potential risks in your life. And that might be true. I mean, I'm not that other like skydiving every week or anything like that, but
sure.
But still, maybe it's something that should cross my radar more. But those trade-offs matter. And if safety, I think, is it probably silly to call it your craft beer equivalent, but if that's something that stands really high on your priority list, then it's worth, I think, buying the nicer mattress, and even though it comes at a loss, and even though you bought the other mattress already. And I think especially if it helps you sleep better, maybe it'll even help your baby sleep better. I don't know if there's any, if there is, the organic mattress guy probably put out some information on it, if there's data on that. But I think you've got to always take into consideration those trade-offs. And yeah, for some people it might move the needle, for others not so much. And of course, it's not because we dislike kids. Matt, you've got four, I've got three. We love our kids.
We love kids.
Yeah, I think this is truly where the saying that personal finance is personal comes into play. And I'm glad, Lindy, that you feel comfortable with the decision you've made. And hopefully this discussion gives other people maybe some food for thought as they're thinking about the kinds of purchases they make and what they prioritize in their lives.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is why at the beginning of every interview, we ask what their splurge is, what their craft beer equivalent is, because it gives us a little peek behind the curtain. It gives us a peek into your values.
Just waiting for someone to answer safety.
You know what somebody has? What's her name? When we talked about military...
Oh, Lacey Langford.
Lacey.
Okay, that's right.
She mentioned how, whether it's the neighborhood, but for her... She was willing to pay not top dollar, but more in order to have that.
That's why she's got the barbed wire around her face, too.
The fact is, Lindy, you have the ability to pursue what it is that you think is going to lead to the most happiness. Like, that's what's so great about the country we live in. Like, we have the freedom to be able to spend our money and to pursue the things that we want to, that we think is going to move the needle the most for us. And like, you're calling it safety, but for Lindy, I don't know, maybe Lindy would call it prioritizing health and making sure that whether it's, again, what she's eating or what, you know, what it is that she's putting her baby on. But Lindy, we hope that gives you some food for thought, not specifically for the mattress since you went ahead and pulled the trigger on that, but just everything that we end up purchasing. I think this is the same framework that we can use as we're trying to make the best decisions for us and for our family. Joel, we've got more to get to. We're going to hear from a listener who has unfortunately been with one of the big banks. We'll get to that plus more right after this.
Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000-plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's Cachava.com/howtomoney.
When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. That's why you listen to this podcast. And if you're looking to upgrade your wallet, you need to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. If you're paying for vacations with whatever card is in your wallet, you could be missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table.
You can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade, lounge access... Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. All right, we're back. We got more money questions to get to on this episode. Matt, you know how we feel about big banks. We're not going to take kindly, maybe, to this next question.
Hi, Matt and Joel. It's Yessel again from New York City. I have another question now about savings accounts. So I have multiple savings accounts at big banks like Bank of America and Wells Fargo. And I know those are some of the worst banks, and produce little yield in terms of interest. So I want to take your advice and put them in high yield savings accounts. So what's the best way to go about doing this? Should I transfer all of the savings funds into one high yield savings account at a single place like CIT? My checking and business banking is with Bank of America, so I'm inclined to keep some savings there. I welcome any advice you have about making big money moves with large chunks of money like into new banks. I'm always a little nervous when it comes to changing and opening new accounts. Thanks a lot. Take care, y'all.
All right, Joel. I'm willing to take a question from Yessel every single week if she says y'all and she lives in New York City. I don't know if she's doing that just for us. Or if she's like
Speak their language.
Or she's like, they'll understand me better if I use the words that they use.
That's right.
Props for that, Yessel. So this question, it actually makes me wonder if we're too strict when it comes to how it is that we talk about where you do your banking. I hope that's not the case. I hope it's not necessarily coming across that we're like super fundamentalist when it comes to the big banks. But it's just that we believe that the way that they treat their customers, that's just not good enough because they're charging fees. These are fees that our favorite online banks refuse to charge. And while at the same time, they're paying nothing virtually in interest for savers.
It's a double whammy.
Yeah. So while the vast majority of Americans do business with the biggest banks in the country, I don't think we'll ever actually stop trying to convince folks to go a different route. And all that's being said, I take back. I am fine being a... a big bank tyrant.
So like, purist.
I don't think it's something that anybody really should be considering.
Yeah. All right. I mean, maybe it's a Don Quixote-esque approach we're taking because, I don't know, we're making a dent necessarily, Matt, on the number of people in this country who still do business with the big banks, but at least we can influence a minority of folks who listen to this podcast
and
hopefully convince the majority, if not all of them, to not do business with the banks, big banks too.
At least Yessel and her friends.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And that's because, like you said, the big banks suck, right? I guess the best thing, I don't know, maybe they've got going for them is a plethora of brick and mortar locations. But when's the last time millennials and Gen Zers stepped foot in a branch? I don't remember the last time I stepped foot in a branch.
I literally can't remember. There's been like over a decade.
There's literally a brick and mortar credit union being built right up the street from us that I've noticed. And I'm like, really? Like, I guess credit unions there's more of a necessity
more
for
traffic.
Brick and mortar. But for banks, I'm always surprised when they're building new locations because just wondering who's going into them.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. But I think, you know, young professionals, even there was an article about how they're carrying wallets far less often. Like, it's digital everything these days for the majority of folks, especially for young folks. And let's talk about how much it could cost you, Matt. How much maybe less money you're going to have at the end of the day.
Depends on how much money you got socked away.
Depends on how much money. Depends on the specific account you're in. Well, let's say you got $40,000 in savings. You're missing out on roughly $2,000 in interest earnings each year, at least right now, and potentially more if you're being charged ridiculous fees too. Let's say it's $10, $12 a month in fees. That's eating into your savings as well. Yes, unfortunately, it sounds like you don't need convincing. I guess we're just trying to convince everyone else.
Yeah, so you said $2,000. It is worth changing banks for $2,000
right.
a year, whereas we're talking about 4 years earlier with $200. probably not there, but you add a zero to the end of that. That makes a big difference. And she mentioned CIT. They're a great one because of the super high rates they're paying these days. We also like Discover, Capital One. I'm a big fan of Ally myself, and they each offer different features. And so maybe just dig into some of those different options just a bit and see which one might make the sense for the way it is that you're banking. So for instance, like one might offer free checks, but you're saying, well, that's not important to me because I never write checks. Yeah. Well, instead, maybe prioritize the one that's offering the higher interest rate. But specifically, you were asking, how do you make the switch? I like the idea of sending most of your money over to the new online bank, not necessarily all of your money, because you want to ensure that any automatic debits, for instance, like if you got a mortgage payment or anything like a bill pay, an automatic bill pay, you want to make sure that those are also fully switched over to the new account before closing this account completely. That being said, you will be straddling a couple banks for a number of months while you're trying things out. But I think that's important before you maybe take the big plunge and before you close that account altogether.
Yeah. And if you don't want to accidentally miss a payment because you close that account too early and then you're like, oh, crap, now I got to clean this mess up.
Exactly. You end up shooting yourself in the foot. And maybe too, you're asking too, like, how do I actually get the funds over to that new bank? Well, what you do, you go to your brick and mortar, you withdraw $50,000, you put it in a shoebox, and you mail it to Joel and Matt.
We'll handle it all for you.
We'll take care of it for you. No, it is so, it's pretty simple to be able to link your two different accounts.
And making
so,
those ACH transfers.
Yeah. Whether it's most likely going to be the new bank that you end up choosing, that you end up going with, that they'll make it easier. So typically it's easier to pull money from your old account rather than push money to your new account. Yep. But you just set that up. They do the two small deposits. You just verify
32 cents and 12 cents. Yeah.
You know what else I noticed is that they don't take that money back either.
Oh, really?
Frugal or cheap, opening a bunch of bank accounts in order to score a 7 cent plus 9 cent deposit.
Sounds like a waste of your time.
But it's pretty straightforward. There's no need to necessarily wire that money. And
because that costs money too. Wiring,
yeah,
typically.
And sometimes they offer, there's free wires, but the ability, again, this kind of plays into you sort of test driving the new account, because sometimes banks they'll put limits on how much you are able to transfer over once you link your accounts. I almost still see that as a good thing because it keeps you from going all in with one bank before you're trying out all the bells and whistles that they're offering.
All right, you mentioned that it's actually fairly easy to open a new bank account, and you're right, but there's a chance that it actually gets a whole lot easier in the near future. And I think that's how the big banks have retained people. They have the first mover advantage. There's inertia bias on behalf of so many people.
Absolutely.
They just kind of stay put because it's just too pesky. It's just too annoying. I don't really want to go through the hassle of setting up new bill pay at the other bank, blah, 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 blah. And the CFPB, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, they proposed a rule at the end of last year. We talked about this on a Friday flight, I believe, that would force the banks to essentially grease the wheels when you want to do business elsewhere. When you're tired of your big bank and you're like, it's too difficult. Well, the CFPB says banks are going to have to make it easier for you to basically share your old info with the new bank. And so, it's going to help, I think, reduce the friction, which is why so many people decide to stay put. They take it on the chin with fees, with crappy interest rates. And I think if this new rule comes into effect, we're going to see more people being willing to change banks just because it got a whole heck of a lot easier.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I mean, you mentioned inertia bias, which is a psychological term. Like, that's a mental hurdle. And so even if it's completely smooth as butter, there are still going to be folks who are attached to the old bank because, I remember when I walked into that branch as a kid with my parents and, that's mom helped me open that account and I was going off to college because we needed there are all these sort of psychological aspects that keep us where we are. But I do think if there's a way for us to sort of flip a switch and make that transition a little more seamless, it could help for sure. And so Yessel, she also mentioned business checking and she didn't even ask about that. It sounded like she was, of course I'm going to keep my business checking with the big bank with the brick and mortar there. And
what do you have to say about that, Matt?
Well, I think the reason she might be thinking that is because there are far fewer choices on that front. You don't hear about all of these different newer online business checking accounts, business savings account. But that being said, options have improved over the past decade. We're kind of in transition right now. We're actually with Capital One. But we also opened an account with, I think it's Lili. I don't know. It's L-I-L-I. I don't know how to say it. but we actually found that they have some annoying limitations. And so I was referring back to some of the limits that they place on transfers. That's something that we have noticed there with them. And so that's a massive headache, despite the higher interest rate that they're paying to business owners. Certainly, it's nice to earn extra. But if it ends up taking a week to transfer funds, and I'm not saying it does, we just had some, there's some hiccups when it came to transferring over some of our money. Maybe it was more anecdotal. But that can be a real problem for small business owners who are looking to make sure they have funds on hand to make payroll or to pay vendors. And so if you want everything under one roof, if you're looking at personal and business accounts, I think Capital One, it seems like the way to go. They do charge for their business checking accounts, but there's ways to waive that fee if you keep certain minimum balances there within the account. That way you can avoid doing any business with that actual. It's funny because we're talking about Capital One. We don't really see them as one of the big banks. Like they are massive.
They're the ninth biggest. So
they're massive for sure, but they're not the big banks.
Right. We're usually referring to Citi, Chase, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, the top four.
Exactly.
They're the worst.
So that being said, we're fans of Capital One. But again, check out LILI.
I'm going to call it Lili.
Okay. Lili. I forget what they're offering, what they're paying right now, but it's in the 4% range on their savings accounts that you can tie or open there in conjunction with your business checking.
Which that's the whole reason that we moved is because it's unheard of for business.
It's insane.
It's ridiculous because some of the newer business banking accounts will pay you maybe 1% if they feel like it. But Lili is kind of trying to upend the system. 4% on business savings is pretty impressive. So that was the main impetus for the switch. There's been a few hiccups in the transition, but hopefully it'll all be worth it in the end.
Yeah, and I just checked, and it's actually 4.15%. That's pretty sweet.
That's pretty good.
It's worth considering.
Maybe worth some of the hurdles and the headaches to earn that extra, exactly. The extra return.
But Joel, let's get to our next question. This is from a listener who's making a good bit of money. She's wanting to make sure she's taking advantage of some of the different tax loopholes that are available to her.
Hi, Matt and Joel. This is Kara calling from Gaithersburg, Maryland. First, I wanted to thank you for the great podcast you put out. I have listened to almost every episode and also started listening to other financial podcasts, including Afford Anything and Stacking Benjamins. Also, since listening to your podcast, my husband and I have done the following. Changed our cell phone carrier, opened an HSA and invested the money, and we are in the process of getting term life insurance, among other things. My question today is regarding an old employer traditional 401k, which currently has about $54,000 in it. I was planning to roll it into my current employer traditional 401k account. However, after listening to your discussions about the retirement account triangle, tax exempt, tax deferred, and tax advantaged, I was thinking it might be more advantageous to open an IRA and roll the funds into the IRA. I also had a question about Roth accounts. I believe that we are currently under the salary limits for a Roth IRA account. However, if I understand them correctly, we might exceed the salary limits for a Roth IRA in the next 5 years. What happens then? I would love to hear your thoughts on where I should put these funds and anything else that I should consider. Thanks for everything you do.
Matt, I try to exist in a headspace that there are no other personal finance shows in existence. So,
yeah, what are these other shows she's mentioning?
Don't know what you're talking
about.
We
don't know those people.
Don't know what you're talking about here. No, just kidding. She mentioned two great ones, Afford Anything, Stacking Benjamins. Paula and Joe are true gems. They're friends of ours. They're wonderful folks, and they put out great content. So, and Kara, by the way, you have done great work up until this point with your money. And so congrats on all the progress you've made on a variety of important financial tasks. And you mentioned life insurance as one of the tasks that you're attempting to complete right now.
That's on deck.
Yeah, we've got a new article up on the site that we'll link to about how to proceed in terms of getting term life insurance. Term life insurance, of course, the slam dunk choice for 99%+ of people who need life insurance. So we'll put the link in the show notes. Hopefully that'll be helpful as you try to check this one off your to-do list.
That's right. And essentially, Kara, she's got a couple questions here. And we'll spend more time on, I guess, her second question. But first, what do you do with your old 401k? Well, I love the idea of rolling it into your current employer's 401k, as long as they accept rollovers from a previous 401k and that they're with one of our favorite low-cost brokerages like Vanguard or Fidelity. Chuck, Charles Schwab. They count.
Those are three good ones.
They're good as well.
And they're big ones.
And the great thing about keeping the money in a 401k instead of an IRA, though, is your ability to do backdoor Roth contributions, which we'll get into here in a minute. But if your current 401k or the new 401k here, if it doesn't have access to low-cost funds, then you'll either want to keep those old funds back where they are or stick them into a traditional IRA, but the latter could create some frustrating tax implications in the future. We'll kind of dive into this like a fist fight here. There's a lot of
a lot of punches coming from different angles here that you got to consider. And you're right, Matt. Like it's all about where the money is, and is the money with a low cost brokerage that gives you access to those really ridiculously low cost ETFs and mutual funds. Then cool. Then yeah, then totally send that money over there. Or if it's currently with a ridiculously low cost provider, then yeah, I don't mind keeping it there either. But it's all about the fees and minimization of those fees. And let's talk about Roth for a second. Carol, we want you to keep contributing directly to a Roth IRA as long as you can, right? If you exceed the income limits in the near future, of course, kind of like I mentioned earlier, that's a great thing. I kind of wish that those income limits were removed completely, because given the workarounds that we're going to discuss here in just a sec and the fairly tight contribution caps, like you can't contribute more than $7,000 anyway, why not let everyone participate? Why kind of put those income limits and the phase out anyway? It just kind of makes it more of a hassle, more annoying for people. And of course, even though it seemingly cuts off access to investing in a Roth IRA, it's well worth it to make more money. But it's kind of like, Matt, when people complain about taxes as their income grows, they're like, you know what? I think I'm just going to like reduce my income so I don't pay as much in taxes. Or they moan about paying capital gains taxes when they sell an asset that's risen in value. It's not like paying taxes is my favorite thing. Like every time when I'm paying quarterly taxes, I don't have a smile on my face. But I also think of it as a success fee, right? And losing direct Roth contribution access is similar. It means you've been able to elevate your income in a significant way. And so losing your ability to contribute to that fund means you're crushing it.
Exactly. Yeah. And Kara, she asked what happens when she does end up making too much money. And so I guess the way I interpreted the question too is that, well, what happens to the money that I've been contributing to my Roth IRA that I no longer have access to? Well, you no longer have access to contribute to it. So the money you have invested, it just hangs out there.
Yeah, and still doing its thing, growing.
Exactly. So you don't have to worry about that or anything. But we mentioned the backdoor Roth workaround. Let's talk about how to proceed maybe a few years down the road if you still want to get money into a Roth IRA, but your income's not going to allow it. We'll go in the backdoor Roth route. That adds an extra step, but it's actually pretty simple. Basically, you make a non-deductible contribution to a traditional IRA, and then you convert that contribution directly into a Roth IRA afterwards. It's like a few extra clicks of the mouse when you make the transfers, but it is truly that easy. And like, it almost sounds like money laundering, right?
It sounds like something you shouldn't be allowed to do. You're like, wait, I thought there were income limits. How come I can still stick money in a Roth?
But first you stick it in this account, and then you move it over to this account. Yeah. It sounds kind of shady, but it's perfectly legal. But there are a couple of specifics that you need to be aware of, especially because of that old 401k.
That's right. It seems like it should be illegal, but it's perfectly legal, and it's incredibly simple.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you can complicate it. That is, unless the funds in your traditional IRA are blended, right? So if you've made deductible and non-deductible contributions to your IRA, things get a bit more complicated.
That's right.
This is when you run into something called the pro rata rule. And it takes a pretty high degree of record keeping to be able to pull this off properly. And if that's not you, then it'd be worth checking out, I think, talking to a financial advisor on how to do this maneuver correctly. But this is why we're fans of just letting the money that's currently in your 401k keep hanging out there, right? Or putting it into the new 401k, but keeping it categorized as 401k dollars until you're ready to pull the trigger on a Roth conversion. That is going to make the most sense, because once money is in a traditional IRA, the backdoor Roth maneuver becomes more of a hassle.
Yeah, well, and another reason she might just want those funds to sit around is because once you convert those funds into a Roth, you're paying taxes on that money, because she was able to initially contribute to the 401k with pre-tax dollars. And so you have to keep that into account too. What is this going to do to your tax bracket? But something else worth considering, Kara, should you even prioritize a Roth IRA if your income continues to grow? Because again, if you find your way into like this upper echelon tax bracket, you might want to consider some other ways of reducing your taxable income now. So for instance, maxing out a traditional 401k, I'm not sure if she mentioned that she's doing that, but that might be a better idea than, say, splitting your funds between your 401k and your Roth. This is, again, this is food for thought because Roth IRAs are great. We love them, but it might not be as great if you are, let's say, in a 32% or a 35% tax bracket. If that's the case, you want to do what you can to get yourself out of those tax brackets.
Yeah, that's kind of takes me back to our conversation with Sean Mullaney, I don't know, 4 or 5 months back, who is the FI tax guy, a tax planning expert. And he talks about how, yeah, when you can contribute directly to the Roth, if you're in the higher income zone, well, you kind of lose your ability to do some of that tax planning. And if you contribute to those tax advantaged accounts, you're getting the tax break now. And you can always kind of choose your own adventure when it comes to your tax rate in the future. Maybe let's say you decide to take a sabbatical. Then you maybe turn some of that those traditional dollars into Roth dollars in that year when you're going to bear less of a tax burden when you do that, right?
That's right.
Last thing I want to mention here. There are other ways to lower your AGI so you can still qualify for a Roth. So it's just worth mentioning that as your income increases, well, there are things you can do to get the adjusted gross income down in order to make sure you're still Roth eligible. So if you itemize your deductions, donating more money in a given year, for instance, could help get you back below that threshold. Contributing more to a traditional 401k account at your work could also help you get back under that contribution threshold too. So it's just worth thinking about that just because your income goes up doesn't necessarily mean your adjusted gross income has to go up. And so you might still be able to find yourself, and it's going to require probably being more generous or being investing more of your money. But those things can help you still retain Roth eligibility.
Yeah, I think the idea is to keep your options open because so much of making the most optimized decision comes down to you knowing the future, and very few of us know how much we're going to make off in the future, especially if we're still in our wealth building phase of life. But Kara, we hope that gets you pointed in the right direction. Joel, we've got another question to get to. We've got more content here at How to Money. We're going to talk about the risks of health sharing. We'll get to that right after this.
Kachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Kachava really earns their 52,000 plus 5-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in 5 delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Kachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Kachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Kachava. Just go to kachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's kachava.com/howtomoney.
When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. That's why you listen to this podcast. And if you're looking to upgrade your wallet, you need to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. If you're paying for vacations with whatever card is in your wallet, you could be missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table.
You can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade, lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. All right, Matt, we're back. It's time. We got to get to the Facebook question of the week. So much good content in the How to Money Facebook group. We decided to take some of those questions, put them on the podcast. This one comes from Kat. She said, has anyone ever used a health share instead of health insurance? I'm self-employed. I recently learned about a health share company called Crowd Health. I'm a pretty healthy individual, and this seems like a really good option for me.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we're going to jump into it.
I was just going to say, this is something we've written about. We've talked about. We try to temper our enthusiasm because you and I
they're
are
not
both,
for everybody.
They're not for everybody.
Yeah.
But well, they can make sense for a lot of people.
And especially for her. She said she's a healthy individual. Like, that's who these health sharing accounts are made for. And for the folks out there who are self-employed and they don't have benefits from a company who's covering all of your health care costs.
If you're self-employed and you've been fairly successful when it comes to income, I would say health sharing accounts looking into.
This is for you.
Because you're probably like shaking your fist at the sky every time you pay your health insurance premium, and this is one way to make sure that's not as big of a line item in your budget.
Minimize that cost, especially when you're hardly using it, because again, you are fortunate enough to not have any health complications. My family and I, we've been with a health sharing company now for over 10 years, and honestly, we're probably going to stick with it for years to come, unless I end up with like some sort of traditional job with W-2 employment with benefits. Not likely for that to happen, to be honest.
Man, I could see you being a barista. But those, I don't know,
do you get benefits? Not at the...
I guess it depends if you're
at
Starbucks or not.
Not if you're likely at the local good coffee shop, slinging the good stuff. So is it frugal or cheap to go and work for Starbucks?
Sell your soul and work for Starbucks?
Yeah, there'd be some soul selling. For sure. But these health sharing plans, they're not for everyone. You need to know the risks. And the main risk is that health sharing companies essentially function on faith. And what I mean by that is many are actually faith, like religion, faith-based. Crowd Health actually isn't. But you're also putting your faith in the system that this thing works because it doesn't have the same federal oversight as a traditional insurance company. And then let's say you don't meet the rules outlined in the sharing agreement, you can find yourself with a massive bill that they won't help you to pay. And that's assuming that they have the money on hand to pay it. That's one of the things. I mean, granted, I've been with MediShare for over 10 years now and have never had any issues. But Crowd Health in particular, they're a newer company. And for me, in my mind, that's the question I'm asking myself.
You want a little more history.
Yeah. I hate that it's only been around for a few years. Like, it hasn't even been around since before the pandemic. Like, that kind of seemed like yesterday. But what happens the next time there's a pandemic? What happens when a bunch of people who have Crowd Health, they all get sick and it drives up costs? What does that do to quote-unquote premiums? Does the company stay solvent? These are questions I would be asking myself.
Yeah, and you mentioned something that's really important, is that these are not governed the way traditional health insurance companies are.
Yeah, they can just fold.
Right, they don't have the same requirements. And so there is that risk that you're putting up with. And so that was actually in the Facebook comments, Matt, that was one of the replies from a lot of people was like, I don't know, these things like totally scare me. And I get it. I totally understand where you're coming from. But I also think, like, and we'll talk about this in a second, the trade-offs and how much money you can save can be worth it for people. It's something you have to at least take into consideration. I will say, for folks on the lower end of the income spectrum who don't get insurance via their employer, getting traditional insurance via healthcare.gov, that can make the most sense. That can be the best way to go, largely because government subsidies are going to drive that price down significantly, right? So if it were not for those subsidies, if those subsidies didn't exist, health insurance would be completely unaffordable for all those folks too, but the generous subsidies really make it palatable. And so if you make a fairly high income, that's not going to be the case. If you try to go buy a policy on healthcare.gov, if you're making, like, let's say, 200 grand a year and you got a family of five, you're going to find that you are shocked by the premiums you're quoted. I took a look a while back, Matt, and it was going to cost more than $25,000 a year to insure our family of five.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and that was for a plan with a really high deductible. So it's not like it was this Cadillac gold plan or anything like that. It was even better
is the platinum.
Platinum, yeah. So it wasn't
how you roll.
It wasn't the higher echelon. It was essentially one of those crummy bronze plans. And I was like, listen, am I really going to be forking over that much money?
It was the Georgia red clay plan.
Yeah. Like, this doesn't sound great. And so there was just no
this
way.
This thing sucks.
There was no way we were going to do that, pay that much money for and still have that high of a deductible. And so, health sharing, it almost kind of felt like our only real option. lots of folks find themselves, I think, in that position. Maybe that's where Kat is as well. Maybe even just for a single individual, getting that quote on healthcare.gov was just like mind-blowing, hard to stomach. Yeah. And I know it is for a lot of folks. I mean, health insurance, obviously, not cheap in this country.
Well, it's not cheap. And I think, unfortunately, we have an improper view of insurance and the role that it plays in our lives because it's there to mitigate risk. But like you said, you're looking at more than $25,000. It's also financially risky to spend that much money on health insurance when it's likely not necessarily going to be something that you take full advantage of.
At least historically. And
hopefully,
fingers crossed, that continues to be the case.
It's funny because like we were talking, was it earlier when we were talking with Lindy about, like you kind of brought up safety. And I feel like we do live in a culture where safetyism is valued above anything else, including taking risks when it, like, man, this is going to sound like it's coming out as like irresponsible advice. But like bottom line, like we cannot mitigate all the different risks in our lives. And think about what you could do.
Just walk around in a bubble,
like,
Matt.
Like it would probably cost our family even more than $25,000 if that was your quote. Like we've got one additional member.
And who knows?
I
swear this was last year. So like if I went in and looked this year, I bet it's a lot more.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. Like I would be looking at spending more than $20,000 more just for health insurance or health coverage for our family.
And that's not even necessarily going to mitigate the bills you experience on a monthly or annual basis. Most of the time. Yeah, you might get the copay. You might save a few $100, but come on.
But think about the other things that you could do with that money. Think about all the organic mattresses you could buy.
So many.
That keep you out of the... No,
you could fill your home with them.
That keep you out of the hospital. But, I mean, it's up to you as an individual and the risks that you're willing to take on. That being said, I feel like, especially like the younger generation, man, it seems that more and more folks are risk adverse. They're... And maybe in this case, I guess you're not young anymore, but... Neither of us are young like we used to.
I called someone middle-aged the other day, and I was like, wait a second, I'm middle-aged.
That's me. But if you do opt to go the health-sharing route, do get quotes out there from some of the different health-sharing providers. Do a deep dive into the requirements, and Kat specifically was looking at CrowdHealth. They've got really good ratings over on Trustpilot, so that's a great start, even though they are a newer company. I actually looked into their model as well, and it is different than MediShare, than how ours works, Joel. It's very communal in nature. Again, go back to Lindy. Maybe she'd be all about that crunchy...
Maybe.
that crunchy granola plan.
I think it's cool, too. I kind of like what CrowdHealth is trying to do, yeah.
It's cool if you're down with that, but it's way more... I don't know. It does kind of feel like you're on a commune. Like, it had more like crowdfund, like a GoFundMe kind of vibe to the way that they fund things, as opposed to some of the other faith-based sharing plans that feel, though technically not insurance, they do feel a bit more like insurance in the way that they operate. They have an equivalent monthly premium. They have an equivalent annual deductible. They just call it different things because they're technically not allowed to call it the quote-unquote insurance terms, but it functions just like insurance. It's just not federally regulated.
Yeah. I don't think you were hard selling health sharing companies. And I think you would also agree that they're not for everyone.
Yep.
They've worked out well for us. And does that mean they will always continue to work out well for us? Does that mean that we aren't taking on additional risk? I think you and I would both admit we're taking on additional risk by doing this, but we're also mitigating financial risk to a certain extent.
A known financial risk. Exactly, the known risk.
But then there's the unknown financial risk that we face if, let's say, MediShare kicks the bucket or something like that.
And what about the unknown unknowns?
And we get a terrible disease right at the same time, right? So there is, for sure, that risk. We know we're taking on. And as long as you go into that knowing that there are risks attached to it, I think that's important.
Yeah. It's part of why we ride and bike to work.
Right. Let's hope we don't get hit by a car on our bikes. I think it's also important, too, if you're going to go with one of these health sharing companies to save up more cash, right? Because you know you're not going to have the luxury of copays to see the doctor. So every doctor is going to cost a bit more. Instead of $30, probably going to be like $125, $150 for just a visit to a physician. You'll be paying cash rates, which actually aren't as awful as you might think. I guess, Matt, I was a little more worried about the kind of bills we were going to get when we would see a doctor. And every time they're like, oh, no, the cash rate's this. And I'm always like, oh, wow, okay, that's great. I was expecting to pay more. And so, honestly, in some ways, this is actually how healthcare should work.
Oh, like, absolutely.
If we all had to foot the bill for the full price of day-to-day health needs, healthcare wouldn't cost us nearly as much as it does, but healthcare has these, it's weaved its tentacles into every little transaction, and that's part of what has led to rising premium prices. Health sharing companies, they're not perfect. You and I would be the first to admit that, but they can make sense, I think, for folks who don't qualify for subsidies and who are willing to deal with the trade-offs, and the savings truly can be substantial. I mean, we're talking about, probably saving 18 to 20 grand a year each of us. And that's a big deal. And
that's so significant.
If it was $2,000, guess what? I'd go with the traditional health insurance. I'd pay the extra. And to know that my risk was capped, for sure, federally mandated cap.
Sure. I'd pay an extra $2,000.
So I think that would change things. But when you're talking about how significant the savings can be, it's at least worth looking into for a certain segment of the population.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Kat, I hope we didn't steer you wrong. Hopefully, because that's what's so tough here is we don't know, like none of us know what sort of health complications we might stumble into in the future.
You know what this is akin to, though, too, Matt? When someone says, oh, should I drop full coverage on my car? And then we say, well, according to the numbers, yes, you should, as long as you have the savings in place and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, they get in a car accident and they're like, you guys told me to drop full coverage.
It's like the right thing to do.
You're playing the numbers game. I mean, I raised my deductible sky high on my home. Had a tree fall through the roof.
Yep.
Does it feel like the right thing after the fact? No. Was it still the right thing to do on the front end? Yes.
So the question is, is your deductible still sky high?
It is.
There you go, boy. Yeah. You just got to make sure you got the money on hand to cover that deductible were something terrible to happen.
And I'm just cutting all my trees down now.
Let's get back to the beer. You say it this time.
Nomaste IPA.
How do you get the, you got to get the gnome. Nomaste IPA. Yeah, this is
like a gnome doing yoga here.
I love it. He's sitting on a hop. It's a Belgian-style IPA. What'd you think? This is a beer from Moat Mountain.
Yeah, I like it. I like the blend of IPA, of hoppy, and Belgian yeasts. I thought it was a nice little combo. It was a little sweet, a little peppery, a very, very unique style beer. So always fun to try something that's a little off the beaten path.
Yeah, and these guys are out of, where is it? Is it New Hampshire?
That's right.
Oh, yeah, it is. Okay, I thought I was making that up. They got some good breweries up there, but I felt like they were able to ride that line between the IPA and Belgian really well. I felt like it started out as the IPA for sure, and then it finished because like on the front end you get sort of like that sharp those sharp notes from the hops. You kind of get that pepperiness, but then it finishes off more with like the sweet yeasts that you get from the Belgian. Yeah. It's like it
moves from the front of your tongue to the back of your tongue.
It's like a mullet. It's a IPA in the front. And Belgian in the back.
I agree with that. Yep. I think that's a good way of describing it.
I think they'd be...
I don't know that they would love that.
About that description.
I think you're right.
Down here in the South, I feel like the mullet has come full circle. Actually, I mean, it came full circle like 10 years ago where people were embracing it again. But I feel like that this is high praise.
Embrace your inner Joe Dirt, Matt.
That's going to be it for this episode, buddy. You can find our show notes up on the website at howtomoney.com. There is where you can also find our credit card tool that's always up to date with the latest offers and all the different details that you might be looking for when it comes to strategically using credit cards. And you can also sign up for the newsletter up there on the website as well, howtomoney.com/newsletter.
I've heard that it's the greatest personal finance newsletter on the face of the earth.
I just heard it now, so I agree.
I think I said it, and now I'm quoting me. So
it's like a Ouroboros. but that's going to be it for this episode. Until next time, buddy.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today. Health Aid kombucha.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.